Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Villander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hello, this is Tristan.
Charlotte. I'm Madeline.
You're listening to the best podcast in the entire universe.
The Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome to the Tennis Podcast. A very special welcome to Tristan and his lovely kids, Charlotte and Madeline, there that you heard in our intro. They are from the land down under. So hello to Tristan, Charlotte and Madeline, and to all our listeners in the land down under and the world over. If you'd like to introduce an episode of the Tennis Podcast, you can either by becoming a friend of the pod at intro level or upgrading if you're already a friend. Thank you to everyone who is a friend. There are tons of bonus excellent podcasts available to you already with lots more to come. The link to do so is in our show notes. This, though, is going to be our weekly podcast covering all things tennis news and results. Now, obviously, those things at the moment vary from the tremendously depressing and troubling to, luckily, the odd sort of glimmer of light and uplifting news story and result and all those sorts of things. So, look, we'll cover all of it. Some of it will be tough. That's just the way the world is at the moment. But we're going to start, I think, with tennis. We're going to start with the tennis this time, folks. And we're going to start with the two WTA tournaments that we've had this week. The two Hologic, have I said that right, folks? I don't think I have. That was my debut saying Hologic, and I think I said it wrong. It's the new name for the WTA Tour. They have a brand new title sponsor. So we're going to start with our two Hologic WTA Tour events that we've had this week, and our winners, Zheng Shuai and Leila Fernandez. Can we just row back, David and Matt, and have a review of my pronunciation of Hologic?
Well, the beauty is by getting it so wrong initially, you've now got it right. And we've all, you know, we've accepted that there's a right way and a wrong way. And now you're doing it the right way. So it's Hologic.
It was the first time I live alone. So it was the first time I'd said it out loud. We'd said it lots of times in WhatsApps, hadn't we? I'd read it in the agenda. I've read lots of articles about it. But, you know, you don't know what's going to come out of your mouth until you actually say it. That's what happened just then. Anyway, if I correct to Hologic, am I right? Am I just about right there, Matt?
I think so, yes. David sent me a video of someone from Hologic, I think, pronouncing it. So we're on safe ground, I think, with that pronunciation.
Great. And it's important we do get it right, because this is just, it's just brilliant news for, well, for women's tennis and for tennis, quite frankly. This was broken by Chris Clary in an exclusive with the New York Times this week. Brand new title sponsor for the WTA 2. Hologic is a global leader in women's health and medical technology. It's a multi-year alliance, the largest global sponsorship in WTA history. WTA President Mickey Lawler also said it is their most important sponsor in their history. She said, as well as insulating the WTA financially at a time when they've taken their business out of China, this deal will allow them to boost prize money and get a lot closer to equality on that front with the men. And it's understood that the WTA stance on Peng Shuai and tournaments in China was the catalyst for this partnership. So it's really nice that principles can pay sometimes, because it's so often presented and is in reality a binary choice between taking the moral high ground or giving in to commercial concerns. And, you know, I've always got Billie Jean King in my mind, follow the money, follow the money. You know, it's very hard to do what's right if it doesn't also pay, you know, because that is the world that we live in. By and large, this is a capitalist society. So for doing the right thing and for taking a stance on something to also be commercially beneficial, it's almost a relief as much as anything else.
Enormously so. It's ended up being a win-win, because it felt to us like Steve Simon was just doing the right thing in terms of human behaviour in rejecting China if they weren't going to provide the assurances that he felt were needed around Peng Shuai's disappearance and her whereabouts and whether she was being controlled and coerced at all. And at the same time, that was always going to be a huge risk, because you don't know when you're that far in with China commercially whether the tour is going to be sustainable, certainly in a way that the tour has been in the past and wants to be in the future. And this is just a total win-win, because they've found a sponsor that feels completely aligned with what they are and who they are, who is supporting them. And apparently the deal was started from a conversation with Coco Vandeweghe's boyfriend and the head of Hologic on the golf course. They're having a round of golf and talking about this news story around Peng Shuai, and the head of Hologic just said, I want to know more about the WTA, and I want to be involved with them, and I want to back them based on this story. And obviously then conversations ensued, and here we are. And it just, it's something that Steve Simon alluded to at the time, that he felt that values and principles could pay and should pay in this world. And there's too few examples of that. But at a time when nobody else would have seemed to want to step up like this and stand up for what the tour would have believed in or other sports would have believed in, and to just take the risk of that hit, to come out with a new partner like this. I mean, they haven't had a partner for 12 years at title sponsor level. Last one was Sony Ericsson, and that was a big deal back then. I remember when Sony Ericsson pulled out and how worrying that was for the WTA circuit. And here they are with a partner that is financially worth more, and you've got all the players. I don't see, this doesn't happen on the ATP circuit when a sponsor signs up to support the tour, that all the players say, great news, this is huge. But that's what we're getting right now. We're getting all the big name players coming out and lauding this deal, and they feel like they're all in it together. And in the long run, I reckon that the WTA tour will be a stronger force and product as a result of what's happened here.
Very, very well said. And look, it's an increasingly important message, isn't it, that that it's possible to stand up for something without sacrificing, you know, business concerns or all the rest of it. So yeah, it's brilliant news. Not that the situation with, you know, I feel slightly odd talking about the Peng Shuai situation in the past tense. It is by no means resolved. It's just a situation, isn't it, on which there is no movement at the moment, and it remains a concern, along with many, many other concerns in the tennis world at the moment. But we're gonna talk about Leila Fernandez and her title in Monterrey. She has now reached, I think, 4 WTA Tour finals. Hologic, no, I've said it wrong again. I panicked, folks.
It's like Casaclina, isn't it? I always get that one wrong. And apparently, even when I started getting it right, I was told that my rightness was wrong.
Leila Fernandez, Matt, has reached 4 Hologic WTA Tour finals. And 3 of those are in Mexico. And of course, the one outstanding is the US Open final of last year, where she lost out to Emma Raducanu. But she plays so well in Mexico. She had to save 5 match points in order to meet Camila Osorio in the final yesterday. She also had to deal with a break of several minutes due to a lighting failure before coming out to serve and save the 5th of those match points. She is hard as nails, Leila Fernandez. And she's, you know, I remember that Pam Shriver tweet that I think I read out on the podcast at the time from Indian Wells late last year saying Leila Fernandez is just, she's just the best ticket in tennis at the moment. You're just guaranteed a thrilling match. I think the only straight set match I've ever watched her play was the loss to Emma Raducanu in the US Open final. She's just,
and that was a corker.
Yeah, she's just guaranteed to produce something box office, isn't she?
Yeah, she is, because she won this match in a deciding set tiebreak. In the end, it wasn't even her only deciding set tiebreak win of the week. She had another one of those, I think, in the second round. I woke up in the middle of the night and put this match on and saw that it was deep in a third set, and I thought, well, Fernandez has got Osorio right where she wants her then, hasn't she? Because this is this is Fernandez's thing. I am going to back Fernandez in this situation. And Osorio played extremely well, did get to 5 match points in the end, as you said. And that moment where the electrical failure happened, it happened at deuce, during the point at deuce at 5-6, Fernandez serving in that final set. And they carried on the point, and Osorio won it. And Fernandez went over to the chair, I believe, to ask for a let. And I thought that was very legitimate. I really thought there should have been a let during that point. It was quite clear that the lights went down and some of the electronics just went off during the point. It was a big distraction, I think, especially for Fernandez, because it happened just as she was about to hit a volley. Anyway, this break then ensued of 10, 15 minutes. And I just thought Fernandez's body language throughout that break was fascinating and sort of said everything about how mentally strong she is. She took a ball and she just sort of bounced it for 10 minutes consecutively, just staying in the zone, staying focused. And then she came out and had to serve match point down after 15 minutes, found the first serve, saved the match point, came through the game with some brilliant shots and won the tiebreak pretty easily in the end. And it really was just a demonstration of how mentally strong she is and tough to put away, because Osorio pretty much came at her with her best tennis, and Fernandez stood firm and got the win. It was pretty special, pretty incredible atmosphere, and the whole thing was a great watch.
It was their first meeting on the Hologic WTA Tour. But they've played loads in juniors, haven't they? I mean, both of them are still pretty young. I mean, look, we know about Leila Fernandez because of the US Open final last year, and she won junior Grand Slam titles. She was a little bit more on our radar even before that, and has had more sort of big headline moments in tennis. In terms of their respective potentials, Camila Osorio isn't somebody that we necessarily talk about in that little, you know, group of players of that age. Is she worthy of being talked about in those terms? What is her potential?
I think it's hard to say, but definitely worthy, because I think the thing about her is she made her breakthrough, I believe, as a wild card in Bogota last year, winning it when she was ranked, I don't know, about 180 in the world, something like that.
I hadn't heard of her before that week, I have to say.
Same. That was my introduction to her. And I think when something like that happens, you can go one of two ways. You can get really, really excited about them, or you can think maybe it's a little bit of a fluke and what's going to happen next. I remember on the ATP tour, a similar sort of time, one of the Cerundolo brothers won a title in similar circumstances, came from nowhere, and he's not really kicked on. But Osorio really, really has. I think this was her third WTA final overall, and I saw her play Naomi Osaka in the first round of the Australian Open this year, and it was a pretty straightforward win for Osaka, I think 6-3, 6-3, something like that. But I sort of came out from that match more interested in Osorio than I had gone into the match being, because she really showed me something. I thought she lacked a bit of power compared to Osaka, but, you know, who doesn't? But I was viewing that match through an Osaka lens. It was our first time seeing Osaka for a while, and yet I came away from it with memories of how good Osorio was and how many points she played. And I think to do that in the first round of a slam against a big name like Osaka takes something a bit special, takes something pretty significant that Osorio had done. And I like her game, I like the way she competes, and yeah, she is part of a group now of lots of WTA players, not even 21 yet. Świątek, Fernandez, Raducanu, Goff, Anisimova, Osorio, they're all in the top 50, and it's a great group of players. And I think, yeah, she does belong part of them, because she's doing it consistently on the Hologic WTA tour.
I like the way she celebrates. I have to say, I didn't watch that match because my bedtime's at 10 p.m. these days, and you two were messaging one another. I woke to 59 updates this morning about that match, and it sounded fantastic. But what I have done is watched some of her match points and the closing stages of her matches this week, and she's one of those players that draws you in as a spectator, because kind of Del Potro-like, she makes you understand how much it means to her. She a little bit as well like Ons Jabeur, you know, that sort of player that it's everything, and it's feels a little bit out of the blue, and she can't quite believe that it's happening, is the way she makes you feel as a spectator. And I hope there's more of her success in the future, because that kind of connection is what takes sport watching to another level.
Yeah, she produced an incredible performance to beat Elena Svitolina in the quarterfinals. That one was 7-6 in the third, showed all of her, you mentioned what a great competitor she is. I mean, that is increasingly one of my, you know, favorite features in a player, intensity, you know, tooth and nail competitiveness. And she really had to show that to beat Svitolina in that match, who like Dani Ostrzemska in Lyon, who we'll talk about in a moment, was playing for something more than herself, and was very much embracing that in Monterrey this week. And on Monday of last week, at the start of the tournament, she posted a very powerful statement asking for a clear position from tennis's governing bodies, the ATP, WTA and ITF. She said, "We Ukrainian players have requested to the ATP, WTA and ITF to follow the recommendations of the International Olympic Committee to accept Russian or Belarusian nationals only as neutral athletes without displaying any national symbols, colours, flags or anthems. Accordingly, I want to announce that I will not play tomorrow in Monterrey nor any other match against Russian or Belarusian tennis players until our organisations take this necessary decision. I do not blame any of the Russian athletes. They are not responsible for the invasion of our motherland. Moreover, I wish to pay tribute to all the players, especially Russians and Belarusians, who bravely stated their position against the war. Their support is essential." And there have been more of those this week who have done just that. Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova has spoken out quite strongly. Victoria Azarenka as well, of course, Belarusian athlete. That came in advance of Svitolina's scheduled opening match in Monterrey against the Russian Anastasia Potapova, which she did end up playing. And that was because Svitolina's statement was very quickly followed by a joint statement. Stop the presses, folks. Tennis made a joint decision. All of tennis, ATP, WTA, ITF, and for the four Grand Slams, it literally only took the potential outbreak of World War III for them to do that. They have said a deep sense of distress, shock and sadness has been felt across the entire tennis community following Russia's invasion of Ukraine in the past week. Our thoughts are with the people of Ukraine, and we commend the many tennis players who have spoken out and taken action against this unacceptable act of aggression. We echo their calls for the violence to end and peace to return. The safety of the tennis community is our most immediate collective priority. And they announced that they stand united in their condemnation of Russia's actions and, as a result, are in agreement with the following decisions and actions. The WTA and ATP boards have made the decision to suspend the WTA and ATP combined event scheduled this October in Moscow. The ITF board has made the decision to suspend the Russian Tennis Federation and Belarus Tennis Federation membership and to withdraw their entries from all ITF international team competition until further notice. Bear in mind here that Russia are the reigning Davis and Billie Jean King Cup champions. And they say this action follows the cancellation of all ITF tournaments in Russia and Belarus indefinitely. At this time, they say players from Russia and Belarus will continue to be allowed to compete in international tennis events on tour and at the Grand Slams. However, they will not compete under the name or flag of Russia or Belarus until further notice. So we had Svitolina reaching the quarterfinals in Monterrey. And in Lyon, we had Diana Stremska, who had received that wild card after fleeing from Ukraine with her 15-year-old sister. She reached the final in Lyon, and she lost out in three tight sets to Zhong Shuai in the final. Just extraordinary stuff. Zhong was a breakdown in the decider, actually, and a brilliant win for her. That's her third career title. But the story undoubtedly is Diana Stremska, who I've seen doing a lot of media interviews this week. She was on the No Challenges Remaining podcast. I saw her on British Morning Television this week. You know, she's using her status and her platform to speak out and raise awareness, and it's all, you know, it was impossible not to be moved by what she was doing in Lyon this week. It was incredibly upsetting at times, but invariably moving. And I was trying to find the right language to describe what she did. And, you know, you sort of instantly reach for things like unbelievable and extraordinary and can't get my head around it. But actually, I find it really, really believable, because if we know anything about sport and how it functions in the world and how sports people function, it's that very often when players are playing for something more than themselves, it does focus the mind and make something extraordinary possible. I think it was just as likely that she would have, you know, lost extremely one-sidedly in the first round. But what was least likely, what was less likely than her having this extraordinary week and playing brilliant tennis, was her just sort of having a middle of the road or mediocre week. That would have been in many ways more unbelievable. It doesn't really surprise me that in extraordinary circumstances she has done something quite extraordinary. So I'm trying not to reach for the sort of lazy, oh my God, it's unbelievable, I can't get my head around it, because I think actually I really can. And I'm not saying in her shoes I'd have been able to play, you know, WTA final level tennis, but I do get it. It's brilliant, but I understand it.
Yeah, but both she and Svitolina dug into themselves and tapped in to this incredible emotion that they were feeling, and I really felt for them, trying to make sense of it all. I feel for everybody in this situation, of course, but they are our yardsticks, aren't they? Because they're tennis players and we cover this sport. But I've never seen Elina Svitolina look like that at the end of a tennis match. The look on her face, the sense of pride and urgency and desperation to do something positive for her country and to be able to tell everybody how wonderful she thinks her country is and how much it means to her and how heartbroken she is at what's going on over there. Both players wrapping themselves in the yellow and light blue flag of Ukraine at the end of every single match. And it was extremely moving. And their opponents as well, I felt all the way through their runs, had words for them at the end. And they were sharing in it. They were struggling with it, I suppose, in their own way, because there has been such solidarity, I think, at these tournaments. And Yastremska, given the journey she'd made over that two-day period to get to Lyon and perform like that, I mean, she won two of those matches deep in the third set, 3 hours plus and 2.5 hours just to get to the final. Then it was 6-4 in the third at the end. It would be the hard thing is that she did all that and whether she'd won or lost. There's no happy ending to this. This is the world has changed so much now in the last 2 weeks, and I hope that they are going to be able to continue playing tennis and having it help them channel and maybe distract them a little bit, or at least find ways to cope with what is such a difficult situation a little more easily.
And I believe she's received a wild card, hasn't she, to Indian Wells? There was the announcement today that a withdrawal has meant that Naomi Osaka gets in by direct entry. So, I mean, I'm sure Yastremska would have received a wild card anyway, but that frees up an extra wild card, and she's, you know, first name on the list, I suppose, to receive that wild card. And I'm sure she'll receive them wherever she needs until her ranking, you know, gets up to a place where she no longer requires them. So that was WTA Hologic WTA event in Lyon. We also had on the men's side of things, Davis Cup ties. We've had 12 teams qualifying for September's group stages, and then it will be at September's group stages when the finalists are confirmed at the Davis Cup finals. I hope that is very clear for everybody. So who have we had qualifying this weekend? Of course, Croatia, the runners-up last year, Great Britain and Serbia, the wildcards. They've all already qualified for the 2022 Davis Cup finals. Russia are now suspended from the competition, from all international team competitions. And the Davis Cup committee will meet during the week commencing March the 7th, that's this week, to make a decision on the finals lineup and other related matters. So that's quite a vague situation. Any notable results in particular, Matt, from those 12 teams that have qualified for the group stages?
Well, we had easy wins, 3-0 wins for the USA over Colombia, France over Ecuador, Argentina over Czech Republic, and Netherlands over Canada. I would say that result is notable.
Ooh, was that my man Griekspoor?
It was your man Griekspoor. But it was not your man Shapovalov and not your man Ogier Aliassime, hence why Canada lost. But a team needs to replace the Russian Tennis Federation in this competition, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's Canada, because they're the highest ranked losing team from this weekend's ties. It's pure speculation, I have no idea, but a team does need to replace the Russian Tennis Federation, so it could be Canada. That's one to look out for.
Could be Ukraine. That would be, I don't know, just throwing that out there.
Spain over Romania. Carlos Alcaraz made his debut at last in the Davis Cup, having missed out, just having got COVID before the finals last year. Korea will be there. Sunwoo Kwon helped them beat Austria. Kazakhstan beat Norway. That was a good tie, with Bublik beating Casper Ruud in the crucial match there, overturning a 0-3 head-to-head previously. And then you had Germany beating Brazil as well, 3-1. And then you had four ties that were great that went to the deciding match. We had Belgium over Finland. David Goffin had been in terrible form recently, only won 3 of his last 16 matches, managed to get a couple of wins.
Every time you say David Goffin, which admittedly is not very often, I go, oh, God, yeah, David Goffin exists in the world. Which is unfair, really, isn't it? But
He hasn't been that relevant recently.
No, that's what I'm trying to say.
Well, he's been in such bad form, but he does like Davis Cup. He's got an incredible Davis Cup record, and he beat Ruusuvuori there in an important match. Great scenes in Sydney, Australia beating Hungary, a couple of wins for Alex de Minaur on his favourite court, the Ken Rosewall Arena, with Ken Rosewall in the stadium, and then Tanasi Kokkinakis getting the crucial point for Australia in the final match there.
That's pretty big, isn't it, that they've all flown back to Australia to play that tie, and now they'll be flying on to Indian Wells. I mean, that's quite a commitment for a country that is, you know, very vocally opposed to the new format of Davis Cup. That is that's proper commitment from those players.
Yeah, no, it really is. And I mean, this is currently Davis Cup in its most pure form. You know, these are 12 home and away ties, you know, doubles in the middle, reverse singles. Okay, it's not five sets, but this is as close as you get to the old format. And I do think some of the players, de Menor certainly being one of them, Kokkinakis, like the chance to compete in that environment, in that atmosphere. Just a couple of other notable ones. You had Sweden beating Japan in a final match, and they did that without Mikael Ema. Elias won all three of his matches, two singles and doubles, so that was really impressive from him. And then the final one was Italy beating Slovakia. This was very close to being a shock. This went to a final rubber, an Italian team with Sinner, Mazzetti, Sonego, and yet Slovakia took them right to the end. And just the scenes at the end were pure Davis Cup. Mazzetti drafted in for the final match, hit three backhand winners to win it, was lying on the ground. His whole team rushed over and jumped on him. And then across the net, you had Norbert Gombos, inconsolable, just distraught, head in hands, crying into his towel. You know, it was the sort of contrast, elation and despair. And then, it was a day, you know, Italian tennis kind of dreamed of, I think. You know, Sinner and Mazzetti winning their singles matches. They'll be hoping for much more of that in the future. And then Berrettini joined the team via FaceTime for the press conference at the end, which was quite a nice moment as well. So yeah, that was the Davis Cup this week.
Hang on, he didn't play for them, but he got in on the glory via FaceTime.
He did, yeah. A bit like
that's another way of looking at it.
It's a bit like how he didn't play for the Italian team at the Euros and then was on the bus celebrating with them round Italy.
Yes.
Are you saying he's the John Terry in full kit of the Italian Davis Cup team?
I mean, he did reach the Wimbledon final, but I did think...
How many appearances do you need in the Premier League to get a winner's medal?
Is it five?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
It just kind of feels all right, though, with it being Matteo, doesn't
I know.
It? Because he's just such a lovely chap.
Yeah. He's getting away with it, isn't he?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Right then, away from the court, things have been a happening in the tennis world this week. We're going to take a foray, folks, to Coaching Corner. Come and join me in Coaching Corner. We've got one big split and one big reunion And I mean big, folks. We'll start with the split. It's actually sort of backdated tennis news, this, because we've had the announcement that Novak Djokovic is split from his longtime coach, Marion Vida. We understand, or we've been told directly, that this decision was made after the ATP finals last year, but only just been announced, which does make sense because, as far as we could tell, Vida wasn't with Djokovic on his ill-fated trip to Australia this year. Obviously, Goran Ivanišević was very prominent in that trip, but no sign of Vida. He's never won a Grand Slam title without Marion Vida. They did split once before. That was in 2017, but Vida came back the following year. They've both obviously said, you know, incredibly warm things about one another. You know, I've interviewed Marion Vida a couple of times, and Daniela Hantikova, that I work with on Prime Video a lot, is very, very close to him. They're both Slovakian, and it's an incredibly paternal relationship they have. It goes well beyond coaching. So this must have been a really, really wrenching decision. However it came about, I don't know. It's I suppose it's not a shock because it has happened once before. I remember being tremendously shocked by it in 2017. Really, really shocked by that. So I suppose that takes the sting out of this a bit. But I still am surprised because, you know, he so clearly missed him the last time that they split. I know that lull is a little bit of chicken and egg. That lull in 2017 coincided with other things, you know, going on in Djokovic's world as well. You know, the elbow problem, the lack of motivation. But still, he's never won a Grand Slam without Marion Vida. There was a slump the last time that they were apart. So I do find this really, really surprising.
Yeah, I do as well. I remember exactly where I was in 2017 when I read that news that they'd split. It was really shocking at the time. And I think Djokovic actually used that word, didn't he? He called it shock therapy when he ditched Vida and changed his team completely. And it, at the time, it was kind of like, what are you doing? Like, is this the solution? And of course, a year later, they were back together. It doesn't feel like that quite to me. I think partly because Djokovic has already got Goran Ivanišević in place already. You know, Vida's role, very, very significant, but wasn't quite the same as it had been in the past, in the last couple of years. He hadn't been travelling to every tournament. Goran is there. Djokovic does have some stability there. You know, the rest of his team is staying. But, you know, this is a pretty bizarre stage of Djokovic's career, of his life. You know, it's kind of, there's a lot of turmoil at the moment around Djokovic, and he's losing the guy who has been by his side the last 15 years. It's a significant person to lose at a significant time. There were some reports in the Slovakian media that Vida felt that Djokovic shouldn't have played the Olympics last year. You know, he felt that drained him physically, mentally, and he thought the focus should be on the US Open. So as we know, this is a decision that's been made at the end of last year. I think also, even at the end of last year, it wasn't clear how much Djokovic would be able to play while he's unvaccinated. And I think, you know, if you're a coach, Marion Vida, do you want to be coaching someone who can't play all the time? And, you know, and he's also spoken about wanting to spend a bit more time with his family as well, Vida. So there's lots of things going on, but it just adds to all the intrigue surrounding Djokovic at the moment, because Djokovic and Vida has been one of the great partnerships, and we're not going to have it going forward. So I'm very, very intrigued when we do see Djokovic back on the court, what sort of impact this makes.
We do also, in Djokovic developments this week, we've had the change of vaccine pass restrictions in France, or the announcement that they will be changing in later on this month. So it seems like Djokovic will be clear to play Monte Carlo and Roland Garros as well, at the very least on the clay. We also had it reported, I read it via Ben Rothenberg, that Djokovic has lost his Peugeot sponsorship, which was one of his bigger sponsorships, I believe. So yeah, it's a time of it's a time of turmoil, David, for Djokovic.
It's a time of significant change. And I suppose the thing that I'm not sure in my mind yet is how much it will affect him versus how much it clearly affected him 5 years ago. Because if you think back, he ended up going through a succession of coaches, from the weird stuff with Pepe Imaz to Andre Agassi.
You're calling him a coach, David?
he was a person that was there. That's all I know.
He was a person.
Still is a person, yeah.
That's the best thing that we can say about Pepe Imaz.
I mean, he had his brothers with him for a while. He had Andre Agassi was his coach. And do you remember when you spoke to Goran Ivanišević around that time, how kind of amazed and disgusted he was at the appointment of Andre Agassi?
Yeah, he found that confusing, yeah. And there was a really definitely look about him of, why didn't my phone ring?
Yes, and subsequently, of course, it did. There was Mario Ancic, there was Radek Stepanek.
He really did. I'm surprised your phone didn't ring, David. all the phones were ringing.
I was looking at it. I do feel that 5 years on, I do think he's different now to what he was then. I think he's gone through his midlife crisis as a tennis player, and there's no question marks over his desire now. And in fact, I think that the whole situation with the vaccine probably sharpens his desire and determination to just prove everybody wrong and stuff it up everybody. I think that that's what he's going to be like. Where I think the big test is going to be is, he doesn't have anybody, I don't think, now without Vida, who's going to stand up to him and say no, or who's going to say that's the wrong thing to do. I think that Goran is capable of doing that. I don't think Goran is going to shy away from Djokovic, but I think the difference is he agrees with him most of the time. And I think Goran's still got a player's mindset to some degree, and he's as outraged at the same things that Djokovic is outraged by. So I don't think you're going to get this paternal impact that Vida had, and this Goran's more like a big brother who's just going to back him up, and they're going to have the siege mentality to just run through it all together. But I'm not sure that Djokovic can do without that person who's occasionally just going to not go along with him. But, you know, time will tell. I still think Djokovic is so good and so much better than the vast majority that I don't think it'll make a huge amount of difference this time.
That's a really interesting point, because a lot of people would suggest that a lot of his recent woes or sticky situations have been either caused or compounded by the fact that he exists in a bit of an echo chamber. So, you know, that's an interesting one, isn't it? That the removal of Vida, however it's come about, sort of makes that echoey chamber that bit more echoey, I suppose. That's why you come here for your analysis, isn't it?
Bit more echoey, folks.
How echoey is that echo chamber? Right then, we're going to stay a while longer in Coaching Corner, folks, because I'm enjoying it. And because I don't think we've even got on to the biggest item of coaching news this week, and that is that Andy Murray and Ivan Lendl are getting the band back together one more time. I was going to say one last time there, but who on earth knows with these two? Surprise levels, folks, when you heard this news. Where were they on the scale?
Oh, right up there. More surprised than last time, I would say. And I mean, I was surprised last time, don't get me wrong. It wasn't like I was predicting that would happen. But I remember thinking at the time, that's a really good idea. This one was just a proper shock to me. But also, now I think about it, also a good idea. I just feel like Ivan Lendl is the man that can get through to Andy Murray at a level that nobody else has ever managed before. And he simplifies his game and distills it into what we were talking about the other week in talking about Ash Barty, the point construction in order to win points. He just has formulas, does Lendl, when he's working with Andy Murray, that Murray buys into, follows and off he goes. And I do think it's been an incredible achievement from Andy Murray the last 2 years to get back out on tour, to play the level that he has. He's won some matches, he's lost some, he's still going. But I think if you're going to rinse out the very last bits of potential that he has in that body of his and make them relevant on the tour again and in big tournaments, I would back Ivan Lendl to be the one to help him do that above anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I was extremely excited by this news, I think, first and foremost, because, yeah, as David says, Marion Lendl, it works. It worked to get him to be a Grand Slam champion. It worked to get him to world number one. And now, you know, I have faith that it will work for whatever Murray is trying to achieve now as a tennis player at this stage in his career. But I was extremely surprised. You know, the only thing that wasn't surprising is we know Murray's been looking for a coach. You know, so that was, you know, we were expecting some sort of coaching announcement from Murray. But that it would be Lendl is really surprising to me, not least because I think a lot about Murray's press conference at the 2019 Australian Open. Not the press conference, not the one before the tournament where he announced that it was, you know, he was likely to be retiring, but the one actually after he'd played Bautista Agut, when he was asked whether he had any regrets. And he didn't mention Lendl, but he gave an answer that I think a lot of people have interpreted as being about Lendl in terms of pushing it too hard and not saying no at times and stretching himself beyond his limits. And I think a lot of people felt that that's what happened at the end of 2016, the start of 2017, when he was obviously with Lendl. And, you know, look, it worked. It brought him amazing success in the short term, but did it sort of damage him in the long term? So I sort of thought maybe he wouldn't go back to Lendl. Not that he maybe blamed Lendl for that. You know, I think he sort of took ownership and he said, I needed myself to sort of say no a bit more. But I just thought maybe that relationship had gone in terms of Lendl being his coach. But I imagine they've had a conversation about scheduling. And if that's something that, you know, is something that they can overcome together, then it's worth overcoming that, because what Lendl brings to Murray is an extra dimension. And all of Murray's greatest successes, I would say, bar the Davis Cup run, have all come with Lendl there by his side in his coaching corner. So, gosh, it makes me excited for the grass court season, which is, I think, when we're going to see that partnership again for the first time.
Yeah, they said they're going to do a big training block post Miami. Obviously, we've already had the announcement that Murray's skipping the clay court season to focus on the grass. So, it's like the old days, Murray and Lendl doing a training block in Miami. Let's all live in the past where it was a better, safer place. it's fascinating. I share all of your feelings about it, both of you. I'm intrigued and fascinated and excited. So thank you, Andy Murray and Ivan Lendl, for providing that interesting bit of tennis news. A few other bits and bobs to mop up for you from the week. Ash Barty, the world number one, has pulled out of both Indian Wells and Miami. She says, doesn't sound like any specific injury or not one she's willing to disclose, but she says, unfortunately, my body has not recovered the way I'd hoped after the Australian Open. Says she hopes to play Billie Jean King Cup in Australia in April. Danielle Collins, of course, the other Australian Open finalist, she's also out of Indian Wells. My response to that statement from Ash Barty is she's just so damn sensible, isn't she? She just makes all the right, sensible, grown-up decisions. You know, it sounds like there's nothing specifically wrong and plenty of other players in her shoes would just go ahead and play, but she just knows her body, knows what works, and
knows her mind as well, Catherine, because yeah. I reckon she's realised after that marathon of a year she's just had on the road that she has to prioritise. And the only way she can prioritise and be happy is by building in a couple of massive blocks in Australia. And she's sacrificing this part of the year, I would guess, for the Roland Garros, Wimbledon, US Open priorities.
Maybe she's just so practicing with US Open balls, like for a whole month. Yeah.
There's no point, Matt, because it's impossible for her to win the US Open with those balls. Dominic Thiem, folks, is also out of Indian Wells and Miami. He says he prefers to restart his season on clay.
Also now, sensible.
I'm worried, though.
I'm worried
about Dominic Thiem. I mean, You're not worried, David?
He said is good, didn't he? He said the hand's good.
I mean, there's every reason to be worried. I understand, but I also think that I think he will be able to make a comeback without any medical knowledge of his situation other than what he's telling us. But I think it doesn't alarm me massively. I think there is sense to trying to get on his most natural surface, even if he necessarily hasn't had the best result on it. I think if he started at slightly smaller tournaments in April and just got somewhere, built it up slowly, I think there's a chance in that swing to build it up. If you play Indian Wells, you ain't building up anything. You're just pitched straight in against proper players, toe-to-toe from the baseline. I think
this is probably
champion,
smart. David.
I know,
it's not like
he doesn't.
Well,
you're asking
this is a guy that loves playing tennis. He's a week in, week out tennis guy, and he's basically saying my wrist isn't ready. I can't do that yet. It's been a long time.
He's just saying it is ready, but I don't want to start here. Really,
but it wasn't ready 2 weeks ago on clay. I don't know. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't like these. I don't like this stuttering. The stutteringness of this comeback.
There's been a Andy Murray 2017 feel to team this year, to me, in terms of, do you remember Murray went to New York, pulled out at the last minute, started 2018, he went all the way to Australia, pulled out at the last minute. Team was in South America, ready to play, pulled out at the last minute. He's been training, I believe, in Miami recently, and he's just pulled out. I really hope that you're right, David, and he is hoping to just build up more gently, and Indian Wells isn't the place. And I have seen videos of him hitting, and he looks to be hitting fine, you know, but he is also wearing support on the wrist. And would he be wearing support
plan,
if it wasn't,
you know,
great? And it's not the plan.
It doesn't sound like
it. Well, look, David is your place to go for Dominic Thiem optimism. Frankly, optimism of any variety.
Go on, Dominic. You'll be all right.
At David Law Tennis, if you're in need of some optimism at the moment, folks. We have had an update on the health of Roger Federer. I've forgotten how to pronounce his name. It's been that long since he plays tennis. We've had an update on the health of Roger Federer. He spoke to Swiss broadcaster SRF when he attended a Women's World Cup ski race in Lenzerheide. Everyone happy with that pronunciation? Yep, okay.
Not qualified to comment.
Federer has a home there. He said he hopes to make a comeback in late summer/early autumn, which sounds like Laver Cup to me, trying to crawl inside Federer's mind at the moment. He said he had a very good MRI a few weeks ago, which left him feeling positive. He said, "I'm doing well, much better. For 2 months I was on crutches. It was long and I had to start from scratch, but it was the right thing to do. The knee wasn't doing well after Wimbledon. Now I'm slowly getting to a phase where I can think about a comeback." What do we think here? He's watching everything that Rafael Nadal is doing, isn't he? And thinking, yep, that could be me. He was on crutches. I was on crutches. I can do that. What do you think? Optimism, David?
Not very optimistic. I think he's going to play the Laver Cup, is what I think.
And wave?
May well be. Yeah, probably if I was going to pin my expectations to it, then that would be it. Because I think he can play that, in a manner of speaking. And it is his event, and it's in London. It's all those things. He can get a heck of a send off, and he can probably pull that off. And it's around about the right time, isn't it? It's September. By the way, people have been sending me illustrations of the prices of tickets at the Laver Cup, and they are eye-watering. But anyway, I'm sure it'll sell out.
What sort of prices are we talking?
Well, at least £150 is what I saw.
For the nosebleeds at the
O2. Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly. I've just had a quick look, and they're sort of selling multi-session tickets. But anyway, a number of people have written into us and said, you know, mention the fact that the prices are incredible, really incredibly high. But I just think that is a likely event for him to be seen at. Both, even if it is just to say hello, because he's not fit enough to play. But I think he probably could share half a court with Rafael Nadal, and it'd be an incredible moment and all the rest of it. But I don't see him making a professional comeback. Not a realistic one.
I doubt the tickets are now going to come down in price after you have told everybody that it's going to be their last opportunity to watch Roger Federer play tennis. Any optimism, Matt, on the basis of what Federer has been saying there?
Tiny bit, you know. A good MRI is better than a bad MRI. This was the same week. Okay. This was the same week. Severin Luthi also gave some comments, you know, as
that were less positive.
Yeah,
I thought
they were less positive. Yeah. He was saying Federer isn't running yet.
Yeah, he said, look, if you're thinking about Wimbledon, then forget it.
Yeah. I think Federer doesn't know, to be honest, at the moment. I think he would love to do more than the Laver Cup. And I think if the next few months do go well, then he might. But at the moment, seeing him at the Laver Cup feels like the most likely scenario for a comeback. And whether that's it or whether there's more after that, I honestly think depends on how the next few months go. Because it sounds like there's a lot more rehabilitation that needs to happen.
Mm. Yeah.
I can update you, by the way. They're only selling multi-session tickets at the moment, starting at £185 to £2,420. But those are to get you 5 individual tickets. Single session tickets are yet to go on sale. But yes, if you want one now, you're going to be parting with £185 minimum.
Okay, but that could get you to 5 days of tennis?
Yeah.
I suppose apparently. That, you know... Okay, all right, we'll watch this space.
Although I'm clicking through and it's now only offering me cheapest £1,000.
Right, okay. Don't accidentally buy them, David. I've done that before. Last couple of bits of news for you from the week. Serena Williams did an interview... on CNN, she talked about a number of things. She's been at Paris Fashion Week this week, hasn't she, Serena, looking completely fabulous. But she was asked about the incident involving Alexander Zverev in Acapulco and his assault on the umpire's chair. And she was asked about whether there was a double standard in the way the tennis world and the ATP has responded to that. And she said, there is absolutely a double standard. I would probably be in jail if I did that, like literally no joke. And David, you've asked the ATP for an update on whether he would face further disciplinary action for his behaviour in Acapulco and a time frame for it, because, of course, he received the maximum in-tournament fine, I think $40,000, but then of course there's the opportunity for the ATP to impose further punishments on him. We heard at the time that they were considering it. They're still considering it. Is that where we are?
That's right. And
he's in Indian Wells, ready and raring to go. It's hard to,
because you know the tournament is so close to being upon us that surely they're going to make that decision before that tournament gets underway. It was my expectation. I have been told that when they make a determination from the review that is ongoing, it will be communicated to us. But my expectation and my understanding is that decision will be made one way or another, whatever it is, before Indian Wells. So I think we're going to know something fairly soon, is my expectation anyway.
But, I mean, it was already jarring to see Zverev playing Davis Cup, this week. You know, I know it's an ITF event rather than ATP event, but, you know, that just shows, you know, that's just an example of tennis's structure there being a bit flawed. You know, seeing him play Davis Cup with this hanging over him felt unbelievable to me and wrong. And look, he was booed, and he said that he was disrespected by the crowd. And look, it was a pretty hostile environment in Rio. They were sort of booing Kevin Kravitz as well. I think one of the nicest men in the world. I don't think necessarily it was targeted at Zverev, but, you know, it was an uncomfortable situation to see him playing so soon after the Acapulco incident, I felt.
Yeah, there's the ATP needs a sort of Zverev investigations department to devote appropriate resources, I think, in that direction. Last bit of bum news, I'm afraid, to end on. Former top 20 player Varvara Lepchenko has been given a 4-year doping ban. She tested positive for banned stimulant during the Hungarian Open last July, went on after that to appear in 3 tournaments, including winning the title at an event in Charleston, South Carolina, which offered $115,000 in total prize money before then being provisionally suspended in August. She says she intends to appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. This was her second doping violation, but the ITF said she's being penalised as if it were the first, because it was determined that she was not at fault in the other case, which involved testing positive in 2016 for meldonium, the heart medication that led to Sharapova's doping ban, of course. In this case, they said the tribunal found the evidence provided by the player to be vague to the point of non-existent, as Lepchenko failed to prove that her use of the banned substance was unintentional. Not much to say on that, really. Shame. Glad the cheats are being caught. That's it for another packed week of tennis news. We obviously have Indian Wells upcoming. It's one of those tournaments that sort of, it's quite difficult to say precisely when it starts, but the players are there. It starts this week. I will be presenting live coverage on Prime Video in the UK from Thursday. So do tune in for that if you're in the UK. Yeah, my bag is not yet packed. I'm almost anxious to actually pack the suitcase, because it could end up being a jinx. At some point between now and my flight in 22 hours' time, I will pack. So that's Indian Wells this week. Barbora Krejčíková is the top seed at Indian Wells.
Wow. And are Cameron Norrie and Paula Badosa the shortest reigning defending champions of a tournament in history? I mean, it feels like we just had Indian Wells, didn't we? And
you can't ask that. Back. You can't ask us that, Matt.
I'm asking the listeners.
It's for us to ask you.
I don't know. I want other people to find that out for me.
Let us know, folks. Let us know. We have a weekly mascot this week. It is Dexter, a 5-month-old French bulldog owned by Scott and his family. And he's gorgeous. Of course, he's got those contrast little eyebrows. And the photo I'm looking at of him here, he's got a tennis ball in his mouth. And we do appreciate that attention to detail, Dexter and Scott. We really do. He's gorgeous. His colouring is absolutely lovely. So thank you, Dexter, for being our mascot. We all have our mascots. David's got Darwin, Matt's got Gerald, and I've got a victorious Carter, because I picked Leila Fernandez this week in Monterey. Matt picked Camila Osorio, so, you know, aggro, drama, all of it. Billie Jean is with my brother at the moment. She's still, though, sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. Our executive producers are Chris Albert Lee and fellow top bloke Kyle Weingartner. And Matt, we have our shout outs.
We have Kim Ferguson in Glasgow.
Fergie.
Oh, related, I wonder, to the great Sir Alex.
Yeah, there is only one Ferguson family in the world, and in Scotland, I've heard.
Glasgow.
Or Sarah Ferguson.
Less
another
likely,
Fergie.
Also, small chance. Anyway, thank you so much for being one of our friends.
Well, Kim, in her little, tell us anything about yourself. So she's a tennis fan, which I would have thought went without saying, Kim. But also a corgi owner.
Oh, lovely. Well, maybe she is a member of the Ferguson family with the royal connection. They're the official royal dog, aren't they? Oh, lovely. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you, Kim. We have Michael Toth, who says his surname is pronounced like both, so I know I'm saying that right. And he is an American living in Putney and a member at Putney Lawn Tennis Club.
Oh, hello, Michael. Michael, Mike?
Michael. Michael Toth.
Michael. I once went to a trial day at Putney Tennis Club, Michael, and I walked out in protest halfway through. But it
what
was a lovely club.
About?
I was sort of my ability to socialise was sort of on trial. I was made to wear a name tag, and I was being questioned about how enthusiastic I was to attend barbecues. And
she
wasn't very enthusiastic.
Look, I love a barbecue, but I didn't want that to be the basis on which I was being put on trial.
So we went to the Putney Exchange.
It was a lovely, lovely tennis club, though. So yeah, thank you, Michael.
And we have Paula Rory in Aberdeen.
How are we spelling Rory?
Well, Paula says a different spelling to Catherine's godson. R-O-R-I-E, this one.
That's fantastic R-O-R-I-E. Attention to detail from the show, that.
Isn't it?
I love it. Thank you. It's a great name, Paula Rory.
Named Rory.
Yes, I saw him yesterday. He treated me like his waitress, so which I think is an expression of love. Thank you, Paula. That's a great name. I love it. Thank you to all the friends of the pod. If you want to become a friend of the pod, you can do so via the link in our show notes. You can sign up for the newsletter. I don't know why you wouldn't have done that already, but if you haven't, then you can do that. Leave us an Apple podcast review, do all the stuff. And we'll be back with you next Monday for a weekly tennis podcast when I'll be in Indian Wells, hopefully. Pandemics permitting, I'll be in Indian Wells. And we'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.